welcome to Volume 44, Number 29 of your weekly local news magazine, Grapevine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 19th of July, 2024. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Margaret. And in this week's issue, yet more calls for duelling the Achill Strait, tempers raised over a Gorleston bank closure, local shopfronts are judged, and all at sea with the amazing Maze Maze. In addition, the police have some seasonal advice and lots of news from Vision Norfolk. No birthdays this week, so it's straight over to Margaret for the news.
Hello everyone, I'm Margaret, and I'm bringing you this week's news. And, fingers crossed, as I speak, the sun is shining. I'll say no more in case it clears off again. So, if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin with the news. A local man is set to stand trial next year after he denied sexual assaults against a woman. Martin McCabe, 24, has been charged with two counts of sexual assault against the woman, who cannot be identified for legal reasons, on March the 5th, 2022. McCabe of North Quay, Great Yarmouth, appeared at Norwich Crown Court on Tuesday, July the 16th, when he entered not guilty pleas to each allegation. Judge Catherine Moore fixed a trial date of December the 8th, 2025. McCabe was granted bail with conditions he does not contact the alleged victim directly or indirectly. Andrew Thompson appeared for the prosecution and Andrew Oliver represented McCabe. A promising young athlete has been awarded a prestigious sports accolade. Ronnie Tubby, a Year 10 student from Ormiston Venture Academy, is this year's recipient of the Foreman Cup. The accolade, annually presented by the Great Yarmouth branch of the National Federation of Retail News Agents, recognises local athletes' improvements and promise. Ronnie impressed with 100 metres and 200 metre timings of 11.979 seconds and 24 seconds respectively. The 2024 presentation was made by Carol Kemp, granddaughter of Mr. Foreman. Oh, and this is sad news, Gorleston in the news again. And it's about a bank closure. A motion calling for bank bosses to reconsider closing Gorleston's last remaining High Street branch is to be tabled at Great Yarmouth Borough Council. Carl Smith, the leader of the Borough Council, has forwarded the motion as Gorleston is set to become Norfolk's largest town without a bank, following Lloyd's announcement the High Street branch will close in the new year. The motion, forwarded by Mr. Smith and seconded by the Council's Lead for Economic Development and Growth, Daniel Candon, will be tabled at the full Council meeting on Thursday, July the 25th. Mr. Candon said, "This pending closure is yet another disappointment for residents and businesses that rely on their banking being done on Gorleston High Street. It's an argument which stretches up and down the country. Not everyone has access to online banking, and people actually want face-to-face advice. Banks need to take some social responsibility on this." The motion, which was also signed by Yarmouth Labour leader Trevor Wainwright, states the closure will have a significant impact on the local community, particularly affecting vulnerable residents, small businesses and those with limited access to online banking services. The Council requests the Chief Executive of Lloyds Bank to reconsider the decision to close the branch and take into account the significant negative impact on the local community. The motion also states an intention to explore alternative solutions, such as limited branch hours, implementing mobile banking units, or partnering with local businesses to provide banking services. Last week, Great Yarmouth MP Rupert Lowe sent an open letter to Lloyd's chief, Charlie Nunn, saying despite Lloyd's was not responsible for the previous bank closures on the High Street, the responsibility for closing the last branch does lie with your organisation. Mr. Lowe urged the chief to reconsider the decision and requested a meeting with Mr. Nunn or a relevant member of Lloyd's to discuss the matter. The MP said on social media he had received a response to his letter stating the issue was being looked into. Bowling greens. They have witnessed many a sporting battle as bowlers try to outwit each other in Great Yarmouth's Golden Mile. But two of Great Yarmouth's four bowling greens have been left neglected, overgrown and in need of some TLC. Weeds are growing on the once immaculately mowed Yarmouth Court's greens between the North Drive basketball court and Euston Road car park. And rather than the odd poorly aimed bowl, litter is now collecting inside the ditches. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has confirmed the two lawns are no longer in use, but the authorities said there are no plans for their future. Emma Flaxman-Taylor, the council's lead for housing, health and communities, said the teams currently playing on the lawns beside the Britannia Pier occasionally use the old greens for practice. But, Miss Flaxman-Taylor said, there's nothing else in the pipeline for that area currently. Later this summer, the 77th Visit Great Yarmouth Festival of Bowls will be taking place at the greens by the pier. The tournament will run from August the 25th until September the 21st, with 12 events scheduled, including men's and ladies' singles, pairs and triples, over 60s and under 21s. For more information, see Visit Great Yarmouth Festival of Bowls on Facebook. The landlords of a village pub have decided to step back and close its doors. In a statement shared to social media on Monday evening, the team behind the King's Head at Belton confirmed they were closing the venue with immediate effect. This is a heartfelt message of thanks and gratitude to all of our customers who have supported us during our time at the King's Head. Regrettably, the business is not financially viable, and therefore we've made the difficult decision to close with immediate effect and leave the pub this Friday, July the 19th. They added they hope Stonegate will be able to find a new publican soon. The King's Head reopened under its current management in February this year. They had worked to revive the venue, installing a new pool table, darts board and function room. A full food menu offering pub classics, sandwiches, jack potatoes and burgers had also been on offer. The team will still be pulling pints at their other venues, the Bell Inn, Priory Farm Restaurant, the Waveney Inn and the Plough at Blunderston. This is all about a magical, rare phenomenon. And I can actually say phenomenon. Well done me. Right, this is all about Fog Bow over the river. A magical, rare phenomenon has been spotted in the skies over Norfolk. The landscape and wildlife photographer William Hulbert captured images of a fog bow over the River Yare at Buckenham. Fog bows are an arch of mist or cloud that appear during foggy conditions. They are similar in shape to a traditional rainbow and are almost the same size, but they lack the vibrant colours. Because of this, they are often called white rainbows or the ghost of a rainbow. Like rainbows, fog bows are caused by tiny water droplets condensing in the sky. In a rainbow, these water droplets interact with raindrops to reflect a spectrum of vibrant light. However, the water droplets inside a fog bow cannot interact with raindrops in the same way because they're not the right size. The water droplets in a fog bow are around 10 to 1,000 times smaller than raindrops and are nearly always less than 0.1 millimetres in diameter. Mr. Hulbert said the view was hard to capture because of the foggy conditions required to form them, but described the sight as magical. Well, every day's a school day here on Grapevine. You learn something new every day. Oh, and this sounds promising. I'm not holding my breath. Temperatures to hit 30 degrees on Friday. The mercury is at last set to skyrocket as parts of Norfolk are forecast to reach 30 degrees this weekend. A mini heat wave will mark the summer finally arriving due to a change in the meteorological pattern, bringing high pressure from southern Europe. Met Office meteorologist Alex Burkill warned that the exact temperature may remain uncertain, but the weather will still be markedly hotter across the southeast of England. Downham Market and Thetford are once again set to be the hottest areas in Norfolk, reaching 30 degrees at 3 p.m. on Friday, the same as Barcelona. The rest of Norfolk will only be marginally cooler, with Norwich, Cromer and Diss seeing highs of 29 degrees. The Mediterranean temperatures will remain on Saturday, with the mercury rising to 28 degrees across the majority of the region. The heat has led to a warning being issued by the UK Health Security Agency and Met Office, which will be in place from 5 p.m. on Thursday until 11 p.m. on Saturday. The warning highlights the threat of increased deaths among older and vulnerable people. The county is also facing tropical nights if temperatures don't drop below 20 degrees, which may cause further problems for those at risk. However, the mini heat wave may be short-lived, with higher winds blowing cooler air over Norfolk on Sunday, causing temperatures to drop into the low 20s. A head teacher has used art and photography to inspire deprived children in Great Yarmouth. Sharon Mitchell instigated practical art classes for her Year 5 pupils at St George's Primary School, using funds provided by the Forgotten 40 initiative from INEOS to equip them with skills for their futures. Ms Mitchell recruited professional photographer Rebecca Woods and artist Stephanie Nile, setting them the brief of treating children as adults. The result saw children and their parents creating an impressive collection of images. Ms Mitchell said, "I felt as though I had gold in my hands. It was beyond all my expectations." The children's works were exhibited at the Priory and impressed High Steward of Great Yarmouth, Henry Cater, who said, "These are absolutely stunning. It's remarkable that primary school children have achieved this." The project has been so successful that the school board has given Ms Mitchell permission to integrate photography into the Year 5 curriculum. Alongside the children, parents also seized the opportunity to uncover their artistic potential. After-school art lessons were offered to parents like Martin Riley, who relished the chance to reignite his penchant for sketching. He said, "I used to do a lot of sketching when I was young because I was good at it, but I didn't pursue art at all. Now I am drawing again at home. It's made a real difference to the way I look at life. I notice more things in nature, things that I just didn't see before." The artworks from pupils and parents are set to go on public display at several venues in Great Yarmouth until the end of July. INEOS launched its Forgotten 40 initiative in 2021 to help headteachers help their most deprived pupils enjoy a well-rounded education that children from more affluent homes take for granted. A major mission to save 5 people stuck on a broken yacht lasted 17 hours. The vessel became stuck 40 miles off the Cromer coast after its rudder snapped off, leaving the boat unable to steer. With 2 to 3 metre waves crashing into the yacht, the 5-person crew needed urgent help. Humber Coast Guard assembled a team including crews from RNLI Cromer and RNLI Great Yarmouth and Galston. Cromer's all-weather lifeboat was launched at 7:52 a.m. on Saturday, battling the choppy conditions for 2 hours before arriving at the yacht. Due to the risks of being in the Hewitt gas field, the decision was made to attempt to tow the boat back to safety. The choice to tow required help to be deployed from the Great Yarmouth lifeboat Samabetta, which launched at 4 p.m, making its way up the east coast. 8 hours later, the tow was handed over to the Great Yarmouth team. They continued south, taking the broken yacht to Great Yarmouth's Town Hall Quay, bringing the mission to an end after 17 hours. Great Yarmouth and Galston lifeboat was back in her pen, ready for service at 12:30 a.m. Danny Cherry, Cromer RNLI coxswain, said, "Once again, our extensive training ensured we were able to assist the yacht and ensure the safety of its 5 crew. With the sea state and the location of the yacht, the safest decision was to tow. The crew did a fantastic job on a shout that lasted over 12 hours for us. It also demonstrates how we worked as a team with HM Coast Guard and our colleagues at Great Yarmouth and Galston RNLI to locate and safely return the stricken vessel and its crew to shore." A Norfolk attraction is making waves this summer as it reveals its new maze design. Hursty's Family Fun Park in Hemsby, located along Yarmouth Road, reopens for the school holidays from July the 20th to September the 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This will be the 19th year of its summer mega maze, and in 2024 it's in the shape of a lifeboat. It celebrates the 200th anniversary of the RNLI, and donations will be encouraged for the local Hemsby lifeboat, which is self-funded and independently run. The crew will also be there with the boat on select days over the summer holidays. A whole host of activities are included in the ticket price, including jumping pillows, pedal go-karts and trips on a barrel train. An on-site cafe serves hot and cold refreshments, and there's plenty of free parking. Tickets cost £10 for adults, £12.50 for children 3 to 16, £7 for ages 1 to 2, and they are free for wheelchair users and over ones. Pre-book at hurstsfamilyfunpark.co.uk. Hurst's Farm Shop and Cafe is located close to Ormsby St Margaret. And fancy this for a birthday, 106th birthday. One of the last surviving officers of the Royal Norfolk Regiment and one of the region's oldest residents has been honoured on his 106th birthday. Celebrating with his family, staff and residents at Broadlands Care Home in Alton Broad, Lowestoft, Gilbert Baird marked a memorable occasion with a regular tot of whisky, one of the secrets to his long life. His daughters, Maggie Kilpatrick and Sue Lancaster, had travelled from London and Cambridge respectively for the special celebrations, while granddaughter Anna Short was also present after travelling from her home in Sydney, Australia. Born in Great Yarmouth on July the 17th, 1918, Mr. Baird would go on to work at Barclays Bank before joining the 4th Battalion Royal Norfolk Regiment at the end of the 1930s. After being called up to become a full-time soldier on September the 2nd, 1939, he quickly became a corporal before being promoted to lieutenant in January 1941, where he transferred to the 1st Battalion of the Royal Norfolk Regiment. He travelled to Egypt via Brazil and South Africa before moving to Palestine via Khartoum and was promoted to temporary captain as he subsequently fought in Italy, France and Germany. While in the army, he played a number of sports, was a keen swimmer, and after the war he played at Galston Golf Club until he was 90. his younger brother Ronald was shot down and killed while attacking merchant shipping in Tripoli Harbour in 1941. After leaving the army, the former captain returned to banking and married Millicent Nee Hale in Norwich in 1948. After rejoining Barclays Bank, Mr. Baird managed several of their Norfolk offices, including Acle, Cromer and Galston, and he was treasurer of the local RNLI for many years. They lived in Norwich before moving to Great Yarmouth and then Galston, where his wife passed away aged 90 in 2015. He still has a house in Galston, having lived on Buxton Avenue since the 1960s, but now resides at Broadlands, a not-for-profit Greensleeves care home in Elton Broad, Lowestoft. As probably the last surviving officer of the Royal Norfolk Regiment, Mr. Baird is also an honorary member of the East Norfolk Lodge in Great Yarmouth, having been a Freemason for 60 years and held every office in the lodge, as he's thought to be the oldest Freemason in Norfolk. Worshipful brother Malcolm Rose keeps in contact with Mr. Baird, and he brought him a bottle of whiskey for his 106th birthday. Mr. Baird also enjoyed watching Dad's Army, his favourite programme, with Captain Mannering, also a bank manager. He also has always been positive and enjoys trips out in the car, particularly to Southwold, where he enjoys fish and chips. Broadlands care home manager Anne Mass said, "Gilbert is amazing for his age and has a full and happy life at Broadlands. He's an absolute delight to care for. He has a very supportive family and can often be seen whizzing round on his mobility scooter. Well done, Mr. Baird, and many years of good health." Their peaceful waters attract more than 7 million visitors a year, but it seems these are turbulent times on the Broads. The Broads Authority has revealed plans to issue staff with body-worn cameras to deal with a rising tide of abusive and violent behaviour on the waterways. It has launched a trial which will see the devices given to rangers who patrol the rivers by boat, as well as key rangers who monitor moorings, and officers involved in planning issues. Officials hope the cameras will help to discourage antisocial and abusive behaviour and will help gather evidence for use in prosecutions. The camera's introduction follows a series of high-profile incidents on the waterways and a period when the BA has come under increasing scrutiny and criticism. In April, William Emerson, 35, appeared in court accused of painting a string of four-letter insults and Nazi references towards the authority on his houseboat as part of a protest. When the Broads Ranger confronted him, he was threatened and told it was an expletive art installation. In the same month, police investigated an incident on Erstead Staithe, where a pair of foul-mouthed fishermen were filmed in a row with a boater, kicking his cruiser as he attempted to moor. And last month we reported how rival tourist traders got into a violent bust-up near Wroxham Bridge. At the same time, there has been underlying tensions among devotees of the Broads between so-called navvies, who are concerned primarily with maintaining the navigation on the waterways and supporting boating activities, and parkies, who are more focused on fulfilling national park obligations, such as conservation and promoting the area. The two factions have clashed on several issues, and the row has led to strong criticism of the way the BA is run. A spokesman for the Broads Authority said, "We're grateful that the majority of our interactions with the public are polite and courteous. However, in light of the rising incidents of violent and abusive behaviours towards our staff, we have decided to commence a body-worn camera, BWC, trial. We hope that BWCs will reduce the likelihood of negative interactions and provide suitable evidence should we need to bring any incidents forward for prosecution." Full information on the trial and ongoing public consultation can be found on the Broads Authority website, including a data protection assessment. The pilot will end on August the 30th and the consultation will close on September the 13th. More local stories in just a few minutes after some news from Vision Norfolk. 2 days out are imminent and they are the following. Firstly, the next gardening group outing, which is on Monday the 19th of August. This is a visit to Tudor Lodge Gardens, Castle Acre, near King's Lynn, PE 32 2AN. This is on Monday 19th of August with the minibus leaving the Bradbury Activity Centre at 10 a.m. and returning approximately at 4 p.m. Tudor Lodge is a 2-acre garden which fronts a 15th century house with topiary, lawns, borders of shrubs, perennials and grasses, and a productive fruit cage and cutting garden. The wild area also has a pond, ducks and chickens. Coffee and tea and cake will be available, but please bring a packed lunch with you. To book by the 12th of August, please call Helen or Mark on 01603 573000 extension 341, or you can email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.org.uk. And the next visit is to Houghton Hall, again near King's Lynn at PE 31 6UE. And this is on Wednesday the 21st of August. Minibus is leaving the Bradbury Activity Centre at 10 a.m. and returning approximately 4 p.m. There is no cost, although donations are welcomed. The visit features Anthony Gormley, Time Horizon Sculptures and the Magdalene Odundo Exhibition. Come and enjoy the huge outdoor sculptures and wander around the grounds with some fantastic gardens. Houghton Hall itself is also open for a visit, and lunch is available in the cafe. Please book by Friday the 9th of August and call Helen or Mark on 01603 573000 extension 341, or you can email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.co.uk.
Thanks, Margaret. And now a rundown of the Yarmouth Hub's August programme. Note that the bookings for all these events start on Monday the 22nd of July. Thursday the 1st of August, it's games morning from 10 until 12. Friday the 2nd sees basket weaving from 10 until 12, and it's Fishy Friday from 1 until 2. Monday the 5th, there's a mosaic workshop from 11 until 1 p.m. And on Wednesday the 7th, the weekly coffee morning from 10 until 12. Thursday the 8th, it's games morning from 10 until 12 and knit and natter from 1 until 3. Friday the 9th features basket weaving from 10 until 12. On to Monday the 12th of August, it's baby group from 11 until 12:30 and life skills cooking group from 2 until 4 p.m. Tuesday the 13th, it's tennis club from 10 until 12, and on Wednesday the 14th of August, coffee morning from 10 until 12 and pathmakers walk from 1:30 until 3. On to Thursday the 15th with games morning from 10 until 12, whereas Friday the 16th sees basket weaving from 10 until 12. Monday the 19th of August, it's the monthly Martham coffee morning from 10 until 12, and on Wednesday the 21st, coffee morning at the Hub from 10 until 12. Thursday the 22nd of August, another games morning from the usual times, 10 until 12, with Friday the 23rd of August hosting the basket weaving group from those times, 10 until 12. Monday the 26th of August, the Hub is closed, reopening on Tuesday the 27th for the 10-pin bowling from 12 until 3. Wednesday the 28th is the weekly coffee morning from 10 until 12, and a one-to-one text session from 1 until 2. Thursday the 29th sees Games Morning from 10 until 12 and a seafront walk between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. Friday the 30th features the Rug Workshop from 10 until 12 and the Audio Book Club from 1:30 until 3. For any info on any activities, please contact the Hub and speak to a member of staff and they will be happy to help. The telephone number for Vision Norfolk, Yarmouth is 01493 745 973. 01493 745 973. Okay, it's back to Margaret now for some more news.
And fancy this for a birthday, 106th birthday. One of the last surviving officers of the Royal Norfolk Regiment and one of the region's oldest residents has been honoured on his 106th birthday. Celebrating with his family, staff and residents at Broadlands Care Home in Alton Broad, Lowestoft, Gilbert Baird marked a memorable occasion with a regular tot of whisky, one of the secrets to his long life. His daughters, Maggie Kilpatrick and Sue Lancaster, had travelled from London and Cambridge respectively for the special celebrations, while granddaughter Anna Short was also present after travelling from her home in Sydney, Australia. Born in Great Yarmouth on July the 17th, 1918, Mr. Baird would go on to work at Barclays Bank before joining the 4th Battalion Royal Norfolk Regiment at the end of the 1930s. After being called up to become a full-time soldier on September the 2nd, 1939, he quickly became a corporal before being promoted to lieutenant in January 1941, where he transferred to the 1st Battalion of the Royal Norfolk Regiment. He travelled to Egypt via Brazil and South Africa before moving to Palestine via Khartoum and was promoted to temporary captain as he subsequently fought in Italy, France and Germany. While in the army he played a number of sports, was a keen swimmer and after the war he played at Galston Golf Club until he was 90. His younger brother Ronald was shot down and killed while attacking merchant shipping in Tripoli Harbour in 1941. After leaving the army, the former captain returned to banking and married Millicent Nee Hale in Norwich in 1948. After rejoining Barclays Bank, Mr. Baird managed several of their Norfolk offices, including Acle, Cromer and Galston, and he was treasurer of the local RNLI for many years. They lived in Norwich before moving to Great Yarmouth and then Galston, where his wife passed away aged 90 in 2015. He still has a house in Galston, having lived on Buxton Avenue since the 1960s, but now resides at Broadlands, a not-for-profit Greensleeves care home in Alton Broad, Lowestoft. As probably the last surviving officer of the Royal Norfolk Regiment, Mr. Baird is also an honorary member of the East Norfolk Lodge in Great Yarmouth, having been a Freemason for 60 years and held every office in the lodge, as he's thought to be the oldest Freemason in Norfolk. Worshipful Brother Malcolm Rose keeps in contact with Mr. Baird and he brought him a bottle of whisky for his 106th birthday. Mr. Baird also enjoyed watching Dad's Army, his favourite programme, with Captain Mannering, also a bank manager. He also has always been positive and enjoys trips out in the car, particularly to Southwold, where he enjoys fish and chips. Broadlands care home manager Anne Mass said, "Gilbert is amazing for his age and has a full and happy life at Broadlands. He's an absolute delight to care for. He has a very supportive family and can often be seen whizzing round on his mobility scooter. Well done, Mr. Baird, and many years of good health." Their peaceful waters attract more than 7 million visitors a year, but it seems these are turbulent times on the Broads. The Broads Authority has revealed plans to issue staff with body-worn cameras to deal with a rising tide of abusive and violent behaviour on the waterways. It has launched a trial which will see the devices given to rangers who patrol the rivers by boat, as well as key rangers who monitor moorings and officers involved in planning issues. Officials hope the cameras will help to discourage antisocial and abusive behaviour and will help gather evidence for use in prosecutions. The camera's introduction follows a series of high-profile incidents on the waterways and a period when the BA has come under increasing scrutiny and criticism. In April, William Emerson, 35, appeared in court accused of painting a string of four-letter insults and Nazi references towards the authority on his houseboat as part of a protest. When a Broads ranger confronted him, he was threatened and told it was an expletive art installation. In the same month, police investigated an incident on Ørsted Staithe, where a pair of foul-mouthed fishermen were filmed in a row with a boater, kicking his crews as he attempted to moor. And last month we reported how rival tourist traders got into a violent bust-up near Roxham Bridge. At the same time, there has been underlying tensions among devotees of the Broads between so-called navvies, who are concerned primarily with maintaining the navigation on the waterways and supporting boating activities, and parkies, who are more focused on fulfilling national park obligations, such as conservation and promoting the area. The two factions have clashed on several issues, and the row has led to strong criticism of the way the BA is run. A spokesman for the Broads Authority said, "We're grateful that the majority of our interactions with the public are polite and courteous. However, in light of the rising incidents of violent and abusive behaviours towards our staff, we have decided to commence a body-worn camera, BWC, trial. We hope that BWCs will reduce the likelihood of negative interactions and provide suitable evidence should we need to bring any incidents forward for prosecution." Full information on the trial and ongoing public consultation can be found on the Broads Authority website, including a data protection assessment. The pilot will end on August the 30th and the consultation will close on September the 13th. Ladies' Evening returns with DJ. A celebrity DJ will be at the decks as thousands of ladies don their favourite fascinators for an evening at the races. Ladies' Evening is returning to the Great Yarmouth Racecourse on Wednesday, where guests can enjoy racing, fashion and entertainment. With gates opening at 3:30 p.m, the first race will start shortly after 5 p.m. After the racing, TV presenter Vernon Kay will be spinning his favourite records into the night with a live DJ set. The fashion stakes will be high, with £500 to be won in the Style Awards. To enter the competition, ladies should head to the flower wall on arrival to get their picture taken. And last year, around 3,000 people attended the event, which saw Radio 2 DJ Scott Mills entertain the crowds. A range of tickets are available for the evening, starting at £27, and can be purchased via the website. Children 17 and under go free to the races when accompanied by an adult. The Great Yarmouth Ladies' Day will take place in September as part of the Eastern Festival, and tickets are already on sale. Shocking figures have revealed just one of almost 80 rapes in public places reported in Great Yarmouth led to someone being charged. Norfolk police figures show investigations into dozens of reports, including many in hotels, B&Bs and guest houses, did not lead to suspects being charged. Between January the 1st, 2022 and April the 22nd, 2024, Norfolk Police received 78 reports of rape in public places in the Great Yarmouth area. While only one case led to someone receiving a charge, summons or postal requisition, figures reveal no arrests were made following 50 of the reports. However, 28 cases led to an arrest. Norfolk Police's Detective Superintendent Dave Freeman said the figures reflect the wider national picture for rape conviction rates, with a conviction at court being one form of positive outcome. In 2022, there were 32 reports filed, with 37 reports filed in 2023, and so far in 2024, 9 reports have been filed. Between January 1, 2022 and April 22, 2024, one suspect in 2023 was charged, summonsed or given a postal requisition. The figures show 15 of the cases resulted in evidential difficulties, with the suspect not identified or crime confirmed by the victim either declined or unable to support further police investigation to identify the offender, with 8 cases in 2022 and 7 in 2023. They showed 11 cases resulted in named suspects identified with the victim supporting police action, but evidential difficulties prevented further action, with 8 in 2022 and 3 in 2023. The police statistics reveal 26 cases led to named suspects being identified, but evidential difficulties prevented further action, with the victim not supporting or withdrawing support of police action, with 10 cases in 2022, 13 in 2023, and 3 in 2024. All 78 reports are currently under investigation. A group of travellers has set up an encampment in Galston. Great Yarmouth Borough Council said the group was moved on from private land at Bluebell Meadows in Bradwell on Friday, July the 12th. They have since set up an encampment on land just off Wood Farm Lane, a spokesperson said. Due processes are being followed. Wood Farm is the location of Emerald Park, the former home of Galston Football Club. County Hall has dropped plans to build 240 houses and a Lidl following concerns about a proposed toucan roundabout. Norfolk County Council was seeking permission for the houses and supermarket, as well as the care site on farmland it owns south of Lynx Road in Galston. The site lies on top of a busy roundabout at Beacon Park, close to the James Paget University Hospital. Since the application was submitted 3 years ago, it has faced strong opposition from both residents and a senior planning officer, with one of the main concerns being traffic chaos. National Highways has now echoed these concerns and recommended that Great Yarmouth Borough Council do not grant planning permission to the scheme. They said that a proposed toucan crossing on Lynx Road appeared to be too close to the nearby A47 roundabout and could lead to vehicles queuing back to the junction. Additionally, in June, a retail impact assessment carried out on behalf of the Borough Council said that granting planning permission for the site could have a material impact on the chances of securing a grocery retail operator for a development at Beacon Park. The County Council withdrew their application on July the 5th. The plan had included 2 access roads from Lynx Road, 2 toucan crossings and a shared pedestrian and cycle track to the northern side of Lynx Road to the junction of Mariner's Compass. The site has been allocated for up to 500 homes, with a withdrawn bid relating to Phase 1. Opinion on the proposed Lidl store was mixed, with some suggesting it would be better sited on Beacon Park. In 2021, a report from the Borough Council's Strategic Planning Policy Officer said the bid fell short in multiple areas and should be refused. And something that's been going on, well, for ages and ages. It's fresh calls to dual the A47 Acle Strait. The campaign to dual the Acle Strait A47 has seen a fresh plea for people to have their voices heard after four incidents saw two people sent to hospital and hours of gridlocked traffic on the main gateway to Great Yarmouth. Long-time campaigner Mick Castle has urged people to add their names to the list of 1,000-plus signatures on an active petition to dual the road. Mr. Castle said during the pandemic, around 5,500 signatures drawn from three separate petitions came to nothing. We need to impress on the new government how important it will be and that we will not be ignored, said Mr. Castle. Dualing the road is still absolutely vital to Great Yarmouth, both to reduce the risk of accidents and to better link the county with the ports at Yarmouth and Lowestoft. Graham Plant is county councillor responsible for transport and chair of the A47 Alliance, which has campaigned to see the entire A47 made into a dual carriageway. He said the priority to get the dualling of the Acle Strait on the National Highways list of upcoming works needed for the country. He added that finishing works at the town's Vauxhall roundabout was the first step, as it would connect with the dualled Acle Strait. Mr. Plant said the £30 million needed for the Vauxhall project had been set aside. Work is progressing now to get that delivered, he added. We're wiggling what we can on our level. Anybody else helping along the way would be most useful. Also joining in the fight is Great Yarmouth MP Rupert Lowe, who has invited the head of National Highways to see the road firsthand to get the process moving. In a letter, Mr. Lowe said the infamous road, which has caused loss of life as well as traffic delays, is strangling investment into the area. Great Yarmouth is being even further left behind, and the road is a driving factor behind that, he added. In his letter to the National Highways Chief, Mr. Lowe suggested a temporary measure introducing enforced average speed limits and banning all overtaking on the road. This sentiment has been echoed on social media, with some saying it is a better alternative than dualling the Strait. However, Mr. Castle said, "You see what happens when a car breaks down. It slows up the town for the whole day." Back in the 80s and 90s, people said we should just widen the road or put a barricade down the middle of the road. But unless you have a dual carriageway, there is always a potential for major disruption, and Yarmouth cannot afford that. The ongoing petition can be found on www.change.org and searching Dual the A47 Acle Strait between Acle and Great Yarmouth, all in capitals. A Norfolk-based agri-tech firm is harnessing the power of nanobubbles to create enhanced water for animals and claims the cost-cutting technology is the future for farmers. For years, farmers' profit margins have been squeezed by ever-rising costs and pressure from the supermarkets, but a Norfolk-based startup could have the answer. Agritech firm Oxel, based in Great Yarmouth, claims its hypo-oxygenated water will cut costs for farmers by reducing the amount they spend on feed. The technology uses millions of oxygen-filled nanobubbles to enhance the quality of water that animals drink. The company claim the water increased oxygen content enhances nutrient uptake, meaning animals convert food into protein more efficiently and reach their target weight sooner, all while consuming less feed. In trials with 6,000 pigs, Oxel said its technology showed increased profits for farmers of up to £9 per pig through reduced feed consumption, accelerated growth and fewer losses to illness. Alex Lee, who founded Oxel in 2022, said with farming's low profit margins, the technology could be worth millions to farmers every year. "We see this as the future for farmers," he said. We enhance animal drinking water by delivering pure oxygen in the form of nanobubbles. 1 milliliter of water can contain over 1 million bubbles. Typical water that comes out of the tap has a dissolved oxygen content of around 8 mg per litre, whereas we deliver up to 40 mg per litre. That oxygen supercharges the reactions already happening in animals' bodies. They can convert food into protein more efficiently and have stronger immune systems, producing cells which make them naturally more immune to disease. We've treated over 500,000 birds and 10,000 pigs with our water already, and the big impact we've seen is that to get the same target weight that the farmer is selling to the supermarket, they consume a lower amount of feed, which is a huge cost for farmers and a major use of land. Oxcell has partnered with Great Yarmouth-based firm Line Engineering to build and manufacture a system to replicate small-scale scientific research at an industrial scale on commercial farms. It says lab tests into the impact of oxygenated water on chickens showed an 11% reduction in the amount of feed required for the birds to reach target weight. On commercial farms, it says this number is closer to 5%. Rather than technology that requires a huge overhaul, we take our machinery with all the clever engineering inside a container the size of a telephone box and plumb it into a farm's existing head cap, treating the water there, Mr. Lee said. There's no overhaul of existing drinking infrastructure on the farm, and we can install the system in 30 minutes. Normally, bubbles would come out of the water, but ours stay in there for up to 120 days. So we can deliver the hyper-oxygenated water from the tank all the way to the gut. We're really good at farming in Norfolk, but there's huge pressure on farmers. This will allow them to keep doing what they're doing, but with lower costs. Anecdotally, we've seen pigs that are less agitated and calmer when they are being treated by our water because they're effectively turning the gut into a third lung, Mr. Lee said. As well as feed saving on an industrial scale, there's also less mortality on farms because they are more resilient to infection and disease. And over the long term, we hope to prove they will need less antibiotics. It will mean fewer losses of animals that don't make it to the plate. Farmers get more for less. We're enabling the animals to have better welfare, and we're reducing the environmental footprint of producing the meat we eat. Globally, the demand for meat is expected to grow by 14% by 2030, according to a report from the UN Environment Programme. We're trialling with large integrators who control 20 or more farms each, some of them up to 600 farms each, Mr. Lee said. We've split trial farms into two, so half have our water and half don't, to build a body of evidence with farmers. We also want the farmers to be the heroes to the supermarkets and deliver produce with better animal welfare.
Well, more news in a while, but firstly, over to the police for some seasonal advice.
IMPC 898 Paula Galili, a community engagement officer with Norfolk Constabulary. My role is to work closely with the community, particularly those groups who may want or need extra support from the police. With summer finally arriving, I thought I would take this opportunity to raise the issue of antisocial behaviour, or ASB. What it is, how it can affect quality of life, how to report it, and what steps Norfolk Constabulary will take to tackle it. So let's start. What is antisocial behaviour? ASB is behaviour that is capable of causing nuisance and annoyance, is likely to cause harassment, alarm or distress, creates significant and persistent problems in a neighbourhood, leaves communities intimidated and afraid. Examples of such behaviour would include noise, harassment, vandalism, graffiti and fly tipping, nuisance neighbours, street drinking, intimidation and threats, violence, hate behaviour that targets members of identified groups because of their perceived differences. It's useful if you can keep a record of the ASB you're experiencing, as a record of each incident is the best way to show evidence. This can be used to fully assess the impact of the activity or as powerful evidence in court. You can use a log as a diary to record what you see or hear, and you should fill in the diary as soon as possible after witnessing an incident so that it is fresh in your mind. Use as much detail as possible, including a word-for-word account of anything that is said, such as swear words. It's important that you include how you are feeling and how the incident has impacted on your normal life. For example, if it has made you feel scared or depressed, stopped you sleeping, made you fear for your children or stopped them playing out in the street, or you feel more affected because of age or ill health. If ASB is affecting you or your family, please contact Norfolk Constabulary on our non-emergency number 101 if it's not urgent, but always call 999 in an emergency. Norfolk Constabulary will work with other agencies, where necessary, to act to address the problem, and you can also discuss any issues with your local councillor, who can act on your behalf to raise concerns with the council and other organisations.
Help! I need somebody! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone. Help! When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. Now, but now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind and opened up the doors.
The Fab Four, of course, with a bit of help. OK, it's that time again to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
UK's best camping spots. A Go Outdoors study has named Norfolk one of the best places to go camping in the UK in 2024. The county was named the country's second best destination behind Cornwall. To gather the results, researchers first compiled a list of the most popular places to go camping. They then compared them based on factors such as the number of campsites in each area and the average cost of the campsites. They also looked at TripAdvisor reviews and compared the quality of the campsite's facilities and the range of activities in each place. Each location was given a score out of 10 based on the findings. Norfolk scored 9.56 out of 10, just short of Cornwall's winning 9.98. East Sussex came third with a score of 9.12. A spokesman for the firm said, "Norfolk is an excellent camping destination due to its stunning coastline, diverse wildlife and rich history. So it's no surprise that it came second in the ranking. Campers can explore the beautiful beaches, nature reserves like the Norfolk Broads, and historic sites such as Norwich Cathedral and Sandringham Estate. The region offers a variety of outdoor activities, from hiking and cycling to birdwatching and kayaking, in a peaceful and family-friendly environment. With a range of camping options, Norfolk provides a perfect escape for nature lovers and adventure seekers alike." Oh, and this is some lovely news. Convoy will return. Yes, and I'll be at the side of the road. A Norfolk summer tradition that has warmed the hearts of many locals and visitors is hitting the roads again for its 37th anniversary. The East Coast Truckers Convoy will take place during the August bank holiday, and some truckers will be heading to Norwich this weekend for a special meet and greet. An exhibition trailer will be parked outside the forum on Saturday from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. and there'll be live music throughout the day, as well as a tombola. Convoy organiser Trevor Howlett said, "We wanted to get to the heart of the city to spread the word. People will have the chance to meet some of the team and find out a little more about what we do. We're hoping the weather will be on our side and it should be a great day for families. Visitors will also have the chance to climb aboard a truck and meet some of the team ahead of the big convoy on Sunday, August the 24th, when 90 lorries will take disabled and disadvantaged Norfolk children for a fun day out at Pleasurewood Hills in Galston. And I can be seen waving away at the Captain Manby roundabout, and those truckers, they do a wonderful job. You carry on. Well done." A man denies supplying Class A drugs. A man is to stand trial accused of possession with intent to supply Class A drugs. Terence Wiseman, 52, has been charged with possession of £3,500 worth of cocaine with intent to supply. Wiseman of the Green Freethorpe near Acle appeared at Norwich Crown Court on Tuesday, July the 16th, when he denied the offence. Judge Catherine Moore set a provisional trial date of May the 25th next year. Wiseman, who was represented by Martin Ivory, was granted bail. And this is a sad story that's housebound. A disabled man has been left distraught after he was left housebound after his mobility scooter was stolen. Mark Chapman was left in disbelief when he discovered the scooter was missing from outside his home in Louise Close, Great Yarmouth, on Wednesday, July the 10th. Mr. Chapman purchased the mobility scooter after he was injured in a motorbike accident in January. The incident left him with a broken leg and collarbone, which required him to undergo a major operation that forced him to learn to walk again. Mr. Chapman, who previously worked as a carer to support his partner Sharon Fisk, who is permanently disabled, was told he may never work again. Ms. Fisk said, "He was absolutely distraught when the scooter was stolen. He was supposed to go into physiotherapy that day. He physically can't walk because his wound hasn't healed from the operation. He ended up using my mobility scooter and went around the whole of Yarmouth looking for it." After reporting the theft, the police said they were unable to come to the property to investigate the incident until a week later, on Thursday, July the 18th. Following several bike and scooter thefts in the area, Ms. Fisk believes the same person is responsible. In a turn of events, CCTV footage caught a woman returning the distinctive blue three-wheeler mobility scooter 5 days later. Ms. Fisk contacted police on Sunday, July the 14th, after the vehicle was returned, when the woman parked it, wiped the handlebars and walked off. Extensive damage was caused to it, including missing mirrors and a ripped almond seat cover. Ms. Fisk said He still can't use it, and I'm constantly checking the CCTV to make sure the scooter is still there. Two care home residents were seriously hurt after getting into a fight, according to an official report. The incident was among a series of concerns highlighted by the Care Quality Commission, CQC, following an inspection of the old vicarage at Ludham. They placed the facility, which is run by the Ashley Care Group, in special measures, rating it inadequate in every area. The watchdog said the home was in breach of numerous regulations regarding safe care and treatment, person-centred care, need for consent, staffing and good governance. Inspectors found there was no budgeted manager at the time, and there had been a high turnover of management since the previous inspection in June 2023. They also identified problems with the recording of accidents and incidents on the site. According to the report, two people using the service had a physical altercation with no staff present, resulting in significant injuries to both. A similar incident had occurred a few days before with the same people, but staff intervened. There were 25 residents at the time of the inspection, which took place in January this year. Bosses at the home have criticised the CQC, saying the delay in publishing the report undermined the hard work that has taken place over the subsequent 6 months. Stuart Dunn, CQC Deputy Director Operations in the East of England, said, "Our experience tells us that when a service isn't well led, this has a knock-on effect on the level of care being given, which is what we found when we inspected the old vicarage." At the inspection in June 2023, the CQC rated leadership as inadequate, and at the January inspection, they found the level of care being provided to people had deteriorated further. During the inspection, the CQC made referrals to the fire service due to concerns about the home's physical environment, and also to the local authority due to safeguarding concerns. The CQC said the service will be kept under close review to ensure rapid and widespread improvements are being made, and to keep people safe while this happens. But the Ashley Care Group, which runs the old vicarage, has hit back at the CQC and urged the watchdog to establish clear timelines for publishing reports on care homes. They said the report's delay, 6 months after the inspection, can undermine the hard work and improvements made by care homes. Ashley George, CEO of the Ashley Care Group, said, "We're devastated that CQC has released the report so late. Our team has worked tirelessly over the past 6 months to improve our services and rebuild trust. They know the report doesn't reflect where we are now. The late release of this report negatively impacts our team and the families we support," he added. A statement on behalf of the care home said, "Since January, we've introduced new technology for improving reporting, updated personalised care plans with residents and families, and introduced key workers. We also have the support of an in-house trainer. The old vicarage has been transformed into a positive community with excellent feedback." Oh dear, and some people are going to go hungry. Close for maintenance. Greggs has temporarily closed one of its stores in the town for essential maintenance work. Pictures show the shutters closed at the bakery in King Street near the market. It follows a similar incident in March of this year where an IT glitch forced the branch in the town to close along with the branches in Gapton Hall and Galston. A sign fastened to the shutters has apologised to customers for the unexpected closure. It reads, "We've had to temporarily close our shop for essential maintenance. Sorry for the disappointment. We will be back again soon. No date has been given for when the Greggs will reopen." A high street jewellery chain in Great Yarmouth has been awarded as having the best shop front in the town. 500 premises from across a range of businesses competed, but judges from the town's civic society were won over by the Marketgate Shopping Centre branch of Warren James. Sales assistant Gabia Dambrusquet said winning the award for a second time was as much of an honour as the first. "We are very proud of our shop and strive to make sure everything looks amazing," she said. "To come out first of 500 other shops makes us feel very proud." She said while trade at the jewellers had been steady, businesses had recently picked up as more lovely holiday makers have made their way to the town. Judges were anonymous and marks were given for the general appearance of the building, its cleanliness, the window display and the pavement outside, down to and including the pavement. The awards were presented by the mayor on July the 11th at a ceremony in the Town Hall Assembly Room. While the Warren James branch won overall winner and best national retailer, tropical fish shop Reef Gems won best independent retailer, the Troll Cart won best national food and drink chain, and Market Row Kitchen won best independent food and drink business. Specsavers picked up the win for services, and Statues on Regent Street won Best Personal Services. Jack's Flower Stall won the award for Best Market Stall, and the New Covered Market won the special award. The awards were presented by Mayor Paula Walters-Bunn. Great Yarmouth Civic Society Chairman Hugh Sturziker said the awards acknowledged the work done by many shops, businesses and market stall holders in making their premises stand out. "It's essential for each and every one to work together to improve the appearance of the town and show pride in it," he said. "This will make the place look so much better and will encourage more visitors to the benefit of all businesses." The award sponsors are Great Yarmouth Borough Council, Town Centre Partnership, Dr. A.J. Kumar and Ian McCready. It has been catapulting thrill seekers into the sky for years. But now Great Yarmouth's slingshot ride is under threat of being ejected from the town's Golden Mile because council officers believe it is unsightly. The 45-metre-high structure in South Beach Gardens has been a summer fixture at the seafront since 2017. It returned in March this year, and the owners hope it can stay in situ until November 2026. Despite it being a mainstay of the seafront for several years, and the fact it is already erected on council-owned land, the future of the attraction is now uncertain due to the complaints from Great Yarmouth Borough Council conservation experts. According to official documents, the authority's conservation officer has objected due to the harm caused to the significance of the surrounding heritage assets. They branded it unsightly and said it contributed negatively and cluttered the character of the area. This is due to the cumulative effect of unsympathetic structures within the setting of important and significant listed and non-designated heritage assets, the official added. The slingshot was erected without prior permission, and now members of the planning committee are due to decide whether or not to allow it to stay for the next 2 years. It's located close to the Grade 2 listed Winter Gardens and the Royal Hotel, two of Yarmouth's landmark coastal buildings. Councillors will have to balance whether or not the perceived harm it causes to the area outweighs the positive benefits it brings as a tourist attraction. An agent for the owner of the slingshot ride insists it is respectful to the surroundings, calling it a distinct artefact instead of a pastiche of its surroundings. It is one of many attractions along Yarmouth's seafront, which also include the Sea Life Centre, arcades and the Pleasure Beach Amusement Park. The Development Management Committee will decide its fate on Wednesday. World record attempts at Hippodrome. Sports and the circus collide at the Hippodrome in Great Yarmouth in a summer show already wowing seafront audiences. The show is said to be a blend of circus acts, sporting skills and acrobatics, spiced up with spectacles such as the water show, including swimmers, giant fountains and special effects. The aptly named show, called Champions, kicked off last weekend and will run throughout the summer, boasting top performers from the UK, France, Italy, Spain, Mexico, Hungary, Norway, Ukraine, Poland and Tanzania. Producer Jack Jay said, "We've been thrilled by the public's response to this new show concept. Audiences can expect football freestyle tricksters, basketball dunk squads, unique tennis racket jugglers, world-class circus acts and even world record attempts by British champion cyclists. Live world record attempts, such as a stunning leap between towers by British champion cyclist Andre Burton, add extra thrill." Hippodrome impresario Peter Jay said, "Being able to witness a world record attempt, live and in person, is something very special. Promising an experience that has to be seen in person to be believed, Champions runs until September the 14th. And you can call the box office on 01493 738 877, or visit www.hippodromecircus.co.uk. New tenants of a pub on the Norfolk Broads have been announced ahead of its reopening. The Pleasure Boat Inn at Hickling Staithe was purchased by the Norfolk Wildlife Trust, NWT, in November 2023 and is currently undergoing a major refurbishment. It's due to welcome back punters later on this summer, with the date yet to be announced. Ahead of this, the NWT has revealed the new tenants, who are Rick and Felicity Malt. The pair already own two successful Norfolk pubs, the White Horse Inn at Neatishead and the Lion at Thurne. A spokesperson for the NWT said, "Investing in a popular local pub is the first step in allowing us to create new ways to introduce people to the nature, landscape and wildlife of Hickling, including walking routes and the growing programme of boat trips from the Staithe. We will work in partnership with Rick and Felicity to ensure that the pub works in harmony with the interests of Norfolk Wildlife Trust. As well as the pub, the NWT also owns the adjacent buildings, large car park and associated moorings." A Conservative councillor has slammed her own council's consultation over controversial care cost hikes for disabled people as flawed, and warned it could lead to a legal challenge. Lana Hempsall said the most vulnerable should not suffer to save Norfolk County Council money, and criticised consultation over the proposals. County Hall's Cabinet will, on August the 5th, decide whether to make changes which could see people pay more towards their care. The Conservative-controlled council agreed earlier this year to make a £42 million worth of cuts and savings, including a proposal to save £1.1 million a year by reducing the Minimum Income Guarantee, MIG. The MIG specifies the income disabled people aged 18 to 64 can keep for everyday expenses after the cost of council-arranged home care is taken into account. Reducing it, which the council says would bring Norfolk into line with comparable councils, would see more than 1,400 disabled people pay more for their care. Some could have to pay towards care costs for the first time, and others between £10 and £50 extra a week. Consultation over two options was held, but disabled people and their families branded the process rigged because of an option of no change was not put forward. Council officers acknowledged changes would have a detrimental effect. A previous attempt to change the MIG led to the council losing a legal challenge. And at a meeting of the authority's scrutiny committee, Mrs. Hempsall warned that because the authority had not consulted over no change, it could be open to another legal challenge. Ms. Hempsel, who represents ACL, said, "The consultation was flawed. If I was the legal team representing the people affected, I do not think it would take me more than 5 minutes to convince a reasonable judge to say this consultation was prejudiced in favour of making the savings. Should financial headroom be made at the expense of non-verbal individuals in Norfolk? I, quite frankly, don't think it should." Council lawyer Kat Hulard said the authority's own legal advice was that the consultation was not fatally flawed. Judith Taylor, whose son has Down syndrome, runs the Disability Network Norfolk Group. She told the meeting, "If these proposals go ahead, Norfolk County Council will be taking money from the poorest and most vulnerable people in our county in order to balance its books. August the 5th will be a very black day indeed for Norfolk's disabled people, their families and carers, if these proposals go ahead." Liberal Democrat Dan Roper, chairman of the scrutiny committee, said some disabled people could have to pay more than £1,000 for care each year under one of the options. Labour group leader Steve Morphew said the Conservatives should have represented alternative options to the MIG saving. In response to his questions, officers confirmed they had not assessed whether the changes would lead to the affected disabled people having increased care needs or what that would cost the authority. Officers said that would have to be established after the Cabinet decision should changes be agreed. Mr. Morphew suggested to Andrew Jameson, the Council's Cabinet Member for Finance, that the change had already been baked in. Mr. Jameson insisted that was incorrect and the Cabinet could decide not to make the change, although that would require savings elsewhere. The Scrutiny Committee agreed a number of recommendations to Cabinet, including that one of the options was preferable to the other if a change was made. It also recommended that, should the Cabinet decide not to make changes, it should explore other savings or funding, and the Council should lobby the Government for more adult social care cash.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accepts responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Andrew, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe, probably hot and well, and bye for now.